Awesome. Welcome everyone who's viewing. I am so pleased today to have Dr. Catherine Elliott, the Deputy Chief Medical Officer of Health for UConn. And we're coming to you to bring information, latest information on what's happening in the COVID situation in UConn. So welcome, Dr. Elliott.
Thank you so much for having me, Mintia. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's fabulous. This is our first Facebook Live with you, so it's exciting. And I'm gonna jump right in because we know that this past week has seen a dramatic shift in the number of cases in UConn, and with the grad ceremonies for Porter Creek Secondary School being postponed, that was a big move, and but a very important one. We know that there's some cases there. And we know that there was also a case for a student that has attended both the Porter Creek Secondary and the UConn First Nation graduation ceremony on Friday. And there's a lot of concern out there. So I wanna just jump right in and ask about for the parents and caregivers of students who attended those ceremonies, can we give them some clarity on what's expected over the next few weeks to stop the spread of the virus? So maybe just what's the general advice for students in those graduating classes?
Thank you. Thank you for summarizing also the situation. I think I do want to add something to the summary. So we do have this outbreak in Whitehorse now. It includes high school students, and it also includes adults who are not high school students who have been socializing together in close contact, et cetera. So it's bigger than the high school students, but it certainly includes high school students. Over the next few days, we're doing the characterization, meaning as more cases coming in, you know, determining the links, et cetera, at the same time as we're acting to control the spread. So all of our cases are unvaccinated in this population. And so we're getting these messages out as quickly as possible to let people know what they should be doing and how to keep themselves safe and how to take care of each other. There'll be a lot of media, there'll be a lot of messaging, and there'll be opportunities for people who already have symptoms to get tested, people who are not vaccinated to get vaccinated, and people to, based on their potential exposure, to isolate themselves from others. And to keep those who are more vulnerable for serious illness, you know, the seniors, elders, people with chronic diseases, people with alcohol use and addictions, people with asthma, diabetes, and all sorts of conditions, keep those people safe. Mm-hmm.
There's also an encouragement, and we'd had this discussion, I think, over the past month around pregnant women as well, to encourage them to get vaccinated.
Absolutely, pregnant women should get vaccinated to keep themselves safe, yes, and for their new people to come.
So with all of those exposures, there's a lot of questions around the individuals who may have been, so a lot of scenarios that have been coming to light where both parents have been fully vaccinated and the child or the student individual may have been in contact, close contact with someone who's tested positive. So what's the advice for those households that have vaccinated parents or vaccinated members?
So it might be easy if I talk about the overall context. So if there is a case, meaning a person who's been diagnosed with COVID-19 in the household, then everyone in that household should self-isolate, even if they're vaccinated. That's the one time people who are fully vaccinated are asked to self-isolate. And the reason is that the times we see those unusual rare breakthrough cases is prolonged close contact of the type you have in a household or with a sweetie or with your, you know, best friends. This prolonged close contact over a series of days is where we can see these breakthrough cases. So in that situation, the person who has COVID-19 should isolate, and the entire household should isolate, even those who are vaccinated.
So Does that also extend? So there's a lot of what if scenarios that are going on out there where an individual has come into contact with a person who's been confirmed, and they were hanging out with somebody else who was next to that person, or how far out from the main case do you have to isolate? Mm-hmm. So you've been twice removed from the original case. Mm-hmm. Is your household still required to isolate?
So the only people who are being asked to isolate are those who are close contacts of a person who's diagnosed with COVID-19. If you've been at an event with a person, but you haven't had that close contact, then we are not asking you to isolate. We are asking you to self-monitor, to watch yourself for symptoms. And if you have any symptoms, no matter how mild, that might suggest COVID-19, then that is the time to get tested.
So self-monitor, they can still go to work, they can still go about their daily business, and they're just looking out for the symptoms of fever, chills, cough, I don't know, sore throat, headache.
So what self-monitor means is that you check in with yourself every day and throughout the day and ask yourself, do I have any of the following symptoms? Some of them could be really mild, and that's why we ask people actually do check in with themselves. The symptoms are fever, chills, cough, shortness of breath, runny nose, sore throat, headache, loss of sense of taste and smell, fatigue, loss of appetite, nausea and vomiting, diarrhea, and muscle aches. That is a big list. Some people might know that every time they get their period, they get a headache. It's the same old headache. It's not something new or different or unexpected. Some people may have a chronic disease and they get symptoms on that list, a muscle aches or a joint ache associated with that chronic disease. That's not a new symptom. So we're talking about new symptoms, even mild ones. And the particularly ones that are most important are, if you just can, you know, want to remember three, it's fever or chills, cough, and loss of sense of taste and smell. Please get tested with any symptoms on the list, but if you have those three, don't hesitate. Please book or call an appointment. So just to go back, what self-monitoring means is you monitor for those symptoms throughout the day. If you have them, you get tested and you isolate away from you know, your work colleagues, anybody who's not... anybody until you find out what that result is. So that may even mean members of your household. At the same time, we have to be compassionate. We know that people are caregivers, people are parents, people are have other roles that, you know, if they leave that role, they're putting a person at risk. Find a way to self-isolate in a bubble. So when my kids were sick, I isolated with them. My husband isolated with the not sick one. You know, this is the type of thing we're talking about. Find a way to do it in that bubble in a compassionate way. But self-monitor means you look for symptoms, get tested if you have them, and in the meantime, you isolate until you have your results.
And then just to be clear, for the individuals that are, they've been in contact with a case and or a confirmed case, and they're asked to self-isolate, that mm-hmm. means for the full 14 days?
Self-isolation is for 14 days. And here's why. If a person infects you, then first of all, anybody can get infected. It's like a common cold. It's, you know, this is a disease that spreads. We could all get it. But if a person infects you, that virus has to sit in your body and multiply and get itself going. And it takes a few days to do that. It may take 3 days. It might take 8 days. It might take up 14 days. In extreme cases, it's taken longer, but we have to also be pragmatic. So we say 14 days, you isolate for that period. If you have any symptoms in that period, please get tested. Mm-hmm. I also want to clarify one other thing in these questions is that who doesn't need to self-isolate? So if you are, I don't think I answered this question before, but if you are, somebody in the household has COVID-19 and people who are that next level. They're not the contact of the case, but maybe they work with the person in the household, or they go to school with them. That second degree person does not need to self-isolate. They should be, as we all should be, in our self-monitoring. Yes.
Okay. There's been, thank you for that clarification. Yeah. I think that's really important. And it helps ease a little bit of the concern and the anxiety that we're seeing out with the increase of cases. With the increase of the P1 variant, can you talk a little bit about the P1 variant and how it spreads, how it's a little bit different than the regular COVID?
Sure.
And also how are the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines are effective against
that? So the to make it complicated and simplify it over the long term, the P1 variant has now, as of this week, been called the Gamma variant. So you will hear for a few weeks, Gamma, P1, you might hear variant first identified in Brazil. We're all moving to Gamma because the 1.1 blah, blah, blah was just a little hard for everybody. So Gamma is what we're talking about. The Gamma variant was first identified in Brazil. It's a more infectious variant than the variant that we had before the variants of concern came out. And so therefore what it means is our public health measures work, the safe six works, washing our hands, wearing a mask, staying home if you feel sick, limiting travel and being respectful of people in communities, and following the guidance, that all works, but there's less room for error. So maybe we got away with something in the spring or not, in the spring a year ago, or, around Christmas time. It's just not as much room for error anymore. So it's more infectious. The vaccine works. Fully vaccinated people are protected against the Gamma or P1 variant. If you're partially vaccinated, it's not complete protection. So getting that full vaccination, 2 doses and 14 full days afterwards, then you're fully protected.
Thank you. I think that clarifies the effectiveness of the vaccine. And we heard that there was a couple of cases that had contracted the virus that had been vaccinated or partially vaccinated. Are those cases recovered, or are there less symptoms? Mm-hmm.
So a person who's fully, we've had one fully vaccinated, one partially vaccinated case. People who are fully or partially, first of all, fully vaccinated, when they contract COVID-19, they tend to have a milder course. So the prevention of severe illness, meaning going into hospital, and the prevention of death is greater, is there with the vaccine. They also tend to transmit a little bit less. So it helps everybody being fully vaccinated, even if you get infected, because they tend to have less virus in them. These are not cases. These two cases were earlier. Our last 12 or to 14 cases have been unvaccinated. So but we do know that happens rarely. But really, this is really an outbreak of among people who are not vaccinated yet.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a chance to give us an update on some of the numbers as of today? So as of Sunday.
Yes, I'm happy to do that. Before I do that, I just want to make sure, Mattia, that I answered the question of when fully vaccinated people don't have to isolate.
Okay.
I'm not sure that I answered that. So I want to just answer that one point. So a person who's fully vaccinated, who's been a contact of a case, who's not a household type of contact. So, maybe 30 minutes of contact or 15 minutes of contact in a work meeting, or maybe you were babysitting somebody, that type of thing, but for a shorter period, that is not those people who are fully vaccinated, who do not have household contact, but are a contact of a case, can self-monitor. They do not need to isolate. So I just wanted to really be clear on that one, because it is a bit tricky, and I want to make sure everyone gets the message they need.
Mm-hmm. And so, we do have a question that came in just in relation to that. It was, by unvaccinated, do you mean no vaccine at all, or are those the ones with the first shot also considered unvaccinated?
Yes, there's only two categories. So there's, you've finished your last shot at least 15 days ago. So you're on the 15th day, that's fully vaccinated. Anything else is considered what I'm calling at this point unvaccinated, but yes, it does include partially vaccinated. It even includes if you got your second shot 7 days ago, it like before your contact, it includes that, unfortunately. So yeah, so it needs to be two doses, 14 days, and no contact prior to that.
In order, could you maybe for the individuals that, because we've only had the youth vaccines, so the Pfizer vaccine out for a short period of time, they would have only received their first vaccine. For those individuals that missed the vaccine clinics in the communities, or they were, for whatever reason, can they still get their vaccine even if they were at an event where there's a confirmed case?
Yes. People who have, who are contacts can be vaccinated. People who are contacts of contacts can be vaccinated. Cases can be vaccinated once they're recovered. So yes, yes, people can get vaccinated even if they might have been exposed. In fact, that is a time to get vaccinated because that helps you overall.
So that's probably,
if you're, I just want to be clear though, if you are a contact of a case and you're isolating, we can't offer vaccination until your isolation is over, just to keep everything moving at this time. Yeah.
Okay. So a close contact.
Yes.
Can't be vaccinated. I just wanted to cover the Pfizer vaccines. They're still out. I think this week is, what did I say? Old Crow.
Old Crow, yes. They're, on Wednesday this week, I believe. It's Old Crow.
And then the only other community that's remaining to get the youth vaccine clinic is Ross River on the 23rd of June. For those that haven't received their vaccine, the clinics are open this week in Whitehorse from Tuesday through Friday. I'm not sure what the hours are, but you can book online at yukon.ca, this is our shot. And then just pick the category for the 12 to 17 year olds, and you can book your appointment there. For those of you that are in the communities and you're wanting to travel in, you can make arrangements through your nursing clinic, and travel arrangements will be paid for through NIHB or through Yukon Insured Health. And I'm not seeing any other questions.
If I can just add to that, Matea, one of the things the nurses are asking right now is that if people can book, it's much better for the clinic. It's much easier to keep it running. We expect a lot of people this week are going to be wanting vaccine. And so if we have a surge of a lot of people dropping in at once, it's very hard to accommodate. But if people book and come, that is very, very helpful for us. So we're encouraging people really to book those appointments.
Right. And maybe one of the pieces that's really important, which we covered previously with Nurse Maria, it was the consent forms. So it is, if you have the capacity to consent, so students can go on their own. There is a consent form for parents if they want to talk this over with their student, their child, and review the consent, review the information package that's online. We will put all of those links onto the Facebook Live and share that out. Do you want to give, I know there's going to be a public exposure notice today. People can go to the yukon.ca COVID site for that. But could you talk a little bit about how contact tracing is going to be carried out, or how it's carried out?
Yes, I can talk about contact tracing, definitely. So because of the very large number of contacts we have in this outbreak, we are asking people to isolate before they are contacted by a nurse. This is really the first time we've done that. We've managed the whole so far pandemic without having to do that. What that means is that normal contact tracing will also happen a nurse will reach out to people as much as they are able and offer that support during the time that people are on isolation. How at the same time, we do need to focus on the new cases that we're identifying and the locations and potential people who may have been affected or at those locations or close contacts and get the word out as quickly as possible. I've been really impressed with how open and how much sharing and knowledge there is in community about this recent cases. And I think it really helps us in terms of getting those messages out. And I'm very grateful for that. We will continue to do that contact tracing. We'll continue to announce new cases as we have them and share information. That today we will have a media release. It will explain that we're declaring an outbreak, that we have, since Friday, we have 6 new cases. 3 of them are linked to other cases and 3 of them are unlinked, but linked to the outbreak in general. And it's adults between, you know, young youth and adults between the ages of 15 and 50, but most are under 40. And I think that, you know, this is the type of outbreak that can happen when, you know, in highly networked communities where people have a lot of close contacts, and we can control it, and it requires everybody to do their part. And part of that, honestly, is taking care of each other. You know, people are afraid, people are worried, and just really being mindful. You know, if somebody says, lay low, you know, think about people around you who might be vulnerable to disease. You know, think about keeping your bubble small. And keeping those people who are at risk safe by maybe, you know, video conferencing or phoning instead of visiting, keeping your distance outside, that type of thing, until we really understand better how much this is going to spread, and also to keep it under control.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I see everybody enjoying their own backyards for the next 2 weeks. Hopefully we'll have some sun. Can you share the numbers for today?
Yeah, so we're at 104 cases now with 6 new cases since Friday. Mm-hmm. And I don't have the active case count in front of me, but I think you can do the math. We'll be down a few cases because a number of people have recovered. I just don't have the numbers right in front of me in terms of active cases.
Mm-hmm. So maybe this is the last ditch effort to push people or encourage people to get their vaccine to help the spread, curb the spread, and to also minimize the risk of getting severely ill. So I'm hoping that the individuals that were medevaced out are doing better. Mm-hmm. I know there's been discussion previously about the hospital capacity here is stretched, especially during the summer as increased travelers come through. It can be a challenge to look after severely ill individuals. So mm-hmm. hoping that people will go out and get their shot. Mm-hmm.
Yes, please do get your shot, and please do follow the Safe 6+1. It really works, and that's what's been holding the fort, you know, for so long. And we just need to get there, and get through, you know, till we get enough people vaccinated, and you know, enough. When you think about enough people, it's really enough people around you, you know, enough people around you vaccinated, because that's how it spreads, right, person to person. So the big number counts, you know, overall, but really when you think about do I have people around me who are vaccinated, who are protecting me? And that's part of the consideration.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I just think of like Native grad was so fabulous to watch everybody graduate. And we're celebrating with all of our grandparents, our parents and nieces and nephews. And that could be a lot of exposure. And we just need to do our part to keep our communities safe. So really encouraging them to go get vaccinated.
And I think if you're worried, you know, if you think you've been exposed, or you know you have a chronic condition, or you're of older age and you might have been exposed, monitor your symptoms, you know, and if you need help, seek help. This is a time to seek help, you know, and know that the goal is to take care of every single person, and don't hesitate to seek help if you're feeling, you know, to seek testing if you have symptoms, or if you need to talk to your doctor, or you need to call 811, or even go to the emergency department. Do those things. That's what we all need to be doing to take care of ourselves. When we need it.
There was a question about, should we consider canceling camps and gatherings? I know there's quite a few gatherings that are scheduled to occur. We have the event happening in Lower Post, and the CYFNGA is coming up. And there's also ADACA, which is a big cultural event.
Yes, so I'm looking forward to ADACA. I know. We just take it one step at a time. So people have phoned us who are hosting events, and we are having those conversations. If you have a number of people who would be coming to your event who are isolating, you know, it might be the time to either postpone your event or spread people thin, you know, at your event. So there's a lot of spacing, people wearing masks, people washing their hands judiciously when they come in and out. It may be that people who are older or people who have chronic conditions avoid those events, you know, right now, because they're concerned, and that's a reasonable choice. So we're taking it step by step. From day to day, the future can change, and that's really what we need to do, is just assess what the risk is now with this outbreak among unvaccinated people and take it step by step from there.
Yes, and I know it's the cases have shifted dramatically. Mm-hmm. Has there been any discussion about changing the border status or the requirement for travelers who are coming back to Yukon that are fully vaccinated to not self-isolate? Has that discussion happened?
We don't particularly know the single origin of this outbreak, and we don't know that it was a traveler who was fully vaccinated who didn't self-isolate. We don't have that as the source, so that, you know, that is not what's caused this outbreak. At the same time, we have these border measures, and we adjust them depending on the risk. So we are looking at all of those things in our evaluation of what the next steps are. Right now we have outbreaks, which means that it's person to person to person in communities, meaning groups of people who hang out together, you know, whether they're high school kids or high school graduates or adults with some overlap. And we do have community cases, and those cases can link back to Whitehorse as well. So it doesn't warrant at this point an overall measure, but we're ready. If we need to do things like that, we're ready to do them, yes.
Yeah, I know. It's some of the cases have been made public in the communities, and just encouraging people to stay safe and continue to practice the safe six. I'm not seeing any other questions coming in from the Facebook Live, but thank you so much for your time, and you get the weekend shift that has.
No, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure. It's a shame that, you know, my face is in the news with this and with the Arctic Winter Games. It's just unfortunate. I've been here all along in the background supporting Dr. Hanley. We work very close together, and he promises me I'm gonna be on for some good news as well. So I'm really grateful to everyone who's working so hard and trying hard to take care of each other and keep people safe. And we just have to all be in this together at this point. So, for the long haul, we will arrive on the distant shore. And in the meantime, we keep our home fires burning wherever and however they may be. So.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And I want to clarify that the Old Crow Clinic is on Tuesday, June 15th.
Yes. Thank you so much. Tuesday. Thank you. Take care.
Okay. Finish teaching.